إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Black and white.
Recientemente, en El Salvador.
Recently, in El Salvador, a country in Central America which has 6.5 million inhabitants,
de los cuales un 30%.
Of which 30% are in absolute poverty and 70% live in informality.
Informalidad que gran parte de su PBI
and a large part of its GDP is based on what is the contributions made by immigrants. General elections on the presidency and other levels of direction of the state have been held.
Elecciones presidenciales y también de otra niveles al Estado, a la dirección del Estado. En las presidenciales, Bukele.
In the presidential elections, Bukele has been elected by 82.6%. That is what the hegemonic press in general communicate around the world.
La prensa hegemónico y hegemónica en general tiró por el mundo. La verdad de que eso corresponde.
The truth is that this corresponds to 52% of the voters, of the people with the right to vote.
De los votantes, de las personas con derecho a voto.
48% abstained and did not participate.
No participó. Es decir, Bukele tiene aproximadamente.
That is to say, Bukele has approximately 80% of half of the Salvadorian electorate. That is the real result and not what is presented as a success in which the entire people turned to vote mostly for Bukele.
Que todo el pueblo se volcó a votar mayoritariamente por Bukele.
Bukele is a rather strange character.
En su tiempo,
in his time, it was said that he preferred the left 1,000 times over the right. Today he meets the extreme right leaders in the world, and he himself is one of them.
De ultraderecha en el mundo. Hace pocos días estuvo en una reunión internacional con Trump, con Bolsonaro.
A few days ago, he was at the international meeting with Trump, with Bolsonaro, with Milei, with Duque, among others, to express his successful policy of eliminating gangs and developing El Salvador.
Y desarrollo de El Salvador.
A development that does not exist anywhere, though Bukele has always made many promises. He has made promises, for example, to build 4 universities in his first mandate. He didn't build them.
No las construyó. Ahora, bien. Hizo una promesa.
Now at least he made a promise to build a Bitcoin city. Such a city never existed. A high-speed train that never existed.
Un tren bala que nunca existió.
But he did build the largest prison of all in Latin America.
Más grande de toda América Latina. Bukele, aprovechando el tema de.
Bukele took advantage of the issue of gangs, which were born in the United States at a time when the country was in an internal war.
En una guerra interna. Donde
where the forces of Farabundo Marti, National Liberation Front,
estaban.
We're trying to take power and build a new society, since the country practically did not exist.
Donde la represión del
Estado, the repression of the state with the support of North American Marines
forma que
was such that 10% of the Salvadorian population went to the United States. That is almost 500,000 people.
En ese momento,
at that time, El Salvador had a population of 4,900,000 people.
Luego Estados Unidos.
The gangs were formed there, then the United States detained more than 5,000, and sent them back to El Salvador, to a place where young people had nothing to do but to join with these prophets who arrived to offer them some opportunity to survive.
Profetas que llegaban a ofrecer alguna oportunidad para subsistir. Eso es lo que ha manejado Bukele.
That is what Bukele has managed: deception, repression, and he has taken advantage of the gang phenomenon created by the system itself. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. Hoy, desde San Salvador, El Salvador, estamos con Walter.
Today, we're with Walter Rottles from Salvador, El Salvador, author, journalist, university professor, and manager of an independent media.
Autor también de libros como Ni Militar Ni Sacerdote.
Walter is also the author of books such as Neither a Soldier Nor a Priest, The Fate of Amoy, and Against the Power of Communication of the Excluded. He was the host of Venceremos, the official radio channel of the Farabundo Martí Front for National Liberation during the armed conflict. Walter, welcome to Black and White.
Walter Raudales, a Negro y Blanco.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure and an honor to be with you from here in El Salvador to try to make sense of this very obscure reality on social media. Undoubtedly, there are many aspects that can only be clarified by those of us who actually live in El Salvador. Thank you very much, and hello to you all.
Gracias a ti, Walter. Mira, desde...
Thank you, Walter. In our countries, for example, in Chile and other countries, when we see the news of Latin America, they emphasize the great victory of Bukele and usually talk about the suppression of gangs and say that this has made the people very happy in general.
A las pandillas, y que eso tiene a la población en general muy contenta. Eso es lo que se habla.
This is what they are talking about. Anyway, before you answer me, it's good to give you a little introduction about the time before 2018 or 2019 when Bukele came to power for his first term as president.
2019, ya cuando asume la primera, ¿cómo se llama?, presidencia Bukele.
What were the previous conditions? What allowed him to emerge as a political figure? We know that he changed the political position because everything tells us that at that time he was aligned with the Farabundo Martí Front.
Porque todo nos dice, cierto, que estaba ligado al Frente Farabundo Martí en su momento.
Bueno, lo que pasa es que no podemos dar por hecho eso.
Yes, we cannot assume this for certain. There are many facts and lies. So we need to specify these two things. In El Salvador, we have a situation similar to what Charles Dickens said in the book Two Cities. He says that we are in the best of worlds and in the worst of worlds at the same time. Later, the best of the worlds turned out to be the digital world, the great digital armies that here are in the service of the current government of President Bukele. The number of people and the production form of his virtual mobs or trolls have been exposed. As a result, here there is a machine. On the other hand, the worst of worlds is the real world. According to the United Nations World Food Program, poverty has increased in El Salvador. When this government came to power, poverty rate stood at 19%. This percentage has increased significantly, and today we are talking about a very high percentage of people. We have a population of 6.5 million, and the World Food Program estimates that 1.8 and almost 2 million people live in El Salvador who are on the verge of starvation. So there are a lot of lies. When it comes to media, you have to be able to analyze very well, otherwise you can get it wrong. Look, previous governments, even the right-wing governments from the Nationalist Republican Alliance, ARENA, tried to somehow negotiate with the gangs. Leaked information indicates that they had contacts to establish some kind of agreement with these gangs. The first FMLN government, the left-leaning Farabundo Martí Front for National Liberation with Mauricio Funes, attempted to negotiate with the gangs. There was talk of a famous agreement, and they negotiated with the gangs, and even the Organization of American States entered the process. At that time, there was a lot of violence in the streets and throughout the country. When Bukele came to office, he had secret and non-public negotiations with the gangs. This issue was revealed in the audio files that were released. They never published it publicly. Under previous administrations, approximately 10 of the 14 main gang leaders were jailed. Here, they're called RANFLA, which is considered as a main committee with the management of gangs. Due to the crimes committed by these prisoners in America, the issue of their extradition to America was raised. At this time, the current government, in a judicial coup, dissolved the Supreme Court of Justice and the Constitutional Court and imposed a new Supreme Court of Justice. This work is referred to as a judicial coup. At this time, in May 2021, the legislature came into action and virtually all extradition proceedings were halted, and this administration agreed with the gang leaders not to extradite them to America. So, how can there be a fight against the gangs when you agree with the gangs not to extradite them in exchange for a reduction in murders? In addition, a very important news was published here, and that was the release of the third leader of these gangs, who is known as Crook. He was released from prison by a government agent. That government agent takes him to a luxury apartment hotel for one night. He takes him to Guatemala, arms him, and lets him through. America arrests him in Mexico. Crook's trial made everyone here very angry because he disclosed important things there. So there's a secret negotiation with the gangs.
We're going to take a short break now, and we'll be back with Walter Raudewals in a few minutes. We continue with Walter Raudewals. We were saying that there are a series of statistics that are sometimes manipulated and not accurate. These statistics are about crimes. Continue, please.
Adelante, por favor.
Bueno, entonces mi planteamiento es que esta.
So what I'm suggesting is that this apparent reduction is a fragile peace based on a secret agreement with the gangs, which has now been exposed. This agreement will have many consequences because when this agreement is lost, this issue is known as mafia peace. This issue has been widely reposted on social media. So I also said that the best of worlds is in social media and the worst of the worlds is in the reality. Because this situation raises the main issues such as crime, which is in a very bad condition. Poverty and hunger in El Salvador are concealed and may not be apparent in social media. El Salvador does not produce as much as it consumes and has to import. El Salvador's economy basically revolves around $7 billion in income that El Salvadorians send to their relatives in the form of remittances from America and communities far from El Salvador's homeland in Canada and Europe. This is their only support. Foreign investment has fallen since the time of coronavirus and has not yet returned to its previous state. Some large garment production workshops that existed in the textile industry are gone. Agriculture has been completely damaged, so the country is run only by remittances. El Salvador exports people. Many of our brothers are forced to flee because there are no living facilities. What I'm suggesting is that we have the best world in the digital space and social networks, but the worst world in real life. As a result, we have two versions of El Salvador here. I want to delve into this issue more deeply. To understand this element conceptually, note that Bukele is an American laboratory. When I say America, I mean its imperial position. They're working with different gangs and they're getting results. They get results because they are people outside the political system and model. They take advantage of the weakness of political parties, corruption, and unacceptability. But they simply embellish this unfavorable situation and support it with new technologies and social networks. They gain attractiveness and create interesting characters using their powers. An example is Javier Milei in Argentina. Ecuador is another example. So imperialism is proposing and testing various models, and it has achieved its desired result in El Salvador. According to this explanation, in Argentina and almost in the same way in Ecuador, they want to control these countries with this method.
Walter, in the same context, American imperialism and the West in general created Daesh in West Asia as a way to destabilize everything and intervene, and as we all know, to implement its own policy. It seems that here the issue of drug trafficking, gangs and crime and security are issues that are always not topics in the hegemonic media, and they talk about crime every day. People want their lives to be protected, and the eyes are directed towards the governments that you mentioned at the end of your speech. And that's how we find out about Noboa and Milei. We see how governments are becoming police states and how public liberties are being eroded. How is this in El Salvador today?
Well, in El Salvador, a state of emergency was passed that takes away all constitutional guarantees and rights. March 28 marks 3 years of this emergency status. In this extraordinary situation, they can arrest you on the street. They will take you to the jail and you have no rights. You don't have even the right to defend yourself because they hold the brief trial for 300 prisoners. International and human rights organizations have constantly complained about this shameless violation of human rights. So there's an extraordinary situation that allows the police, the soldiers of the armed forces, and the military to arrest people on the street and even arrest you in your own home. Therefore, the most basic rights, such as the right to respect the place of residence, freedom of movement, etc., have been lost in this extraordinary situation. And we have been in this awful situation for 3 years now.
Walter, this is how I understand that there are over 65,000 prisoners, and of course over 8,000 were forced to be released because they were taken without charge. And they also say that the leaders of labor unions and the people who have been arrested, some of them were arrested at their place of work due to non-payment of damages and similar reasons.
The situation is dire. It is dire. It's a regime of intimidation. I cannot verify these numbers because the permission to enter the prisons has not been given to the international bodies that carry out the work of verification. There's a very large prison with gang members that they say is the cathedral of gangs, because one of the provisions of the contract is to create a special prison for them. Most people are in the shadow of prison. We are talking about 70,000 people, but this is the information they give. At first, they deny that they had arrested innocent people. There is a movement of innocent victims of the regime called Movir. They are constantly providing information. The latest information is that until now, more than 270 people have died in prison under torture. No one gives you information. There is no process for this in the courts. It is better to say that there is no law in this matter. Worst of all, the arrest is done in a special way. They have set a quota for the policemen and they have to bring a number of people as prisoners daily. Therefore, they give leave to policemen and soldiers according to the number of people. This is a confidential matter and a terrible violation of human rights. Those who have been released speak of the horrific torture inside the prisons, which are considered crimes against humanity. But in addition, there is a media barracks that say this is a successful process and a successful model that is being practiced around the world. They do these using their media arms, their huge digital armies. It is clear that they will take away any possibility of citizenship from you. During 1 hour, they can put a sentence, an idea, and a thought in the minds of the Salvadorians. Do you know what the government's main campaign motto was during the presidential and regional elections? The main message was this: if you vote against the government, they will release the gang members. This is a message of fear.
Yes, that's right, Walter. Wait, you know what's interesting? How do you assess the results of the elections? Because here we discussed only the percentage of votes of the participants in the elections. 82.7% or something like that. About 48% of the population did not participate in the elections.
Se abstuvo de votar como un 48%.
Acaban de pasar acá dos elecciones, la del 3 de febrero, que fue presidencial y de diputado.
Two elections were held here on February 3, presidential and parliamentary elections. Elections turnout was 52%, that is 48% did not participate. Municipalities, regions and members of the Central American Parliament. It was an incredible historical issue because 70% did not participate in this election. There is only talk of the 30% who have participated. They committed fraud in the presidential election because according to the Constitution, the president cannot be re-elected and this is prohibited. Therefore, the mere issue of the president's nomination was a fraud. The entire organizational structure was in favor of this issue, and eventually people have the impression that a fraud has occurred. I will give you a concrete example. When they opened the ballot boxes, there were unfolded votes. I mean, there were voting papers that were not folded. How can they enter that box but not fold it? These papers had to be folded several times to pass through that groove and enter the box. How can there be unfolded votes in the boxes? They were marked with pens other than the official pens of the elections. As a result, the impression that exists among the people now is that there has been an elections fraud and they have not been able to change it with all their media power.
Yes, it is. Walter, we're dealing with fraud and repression. We're faced with unfulfilled promises, for example, four universities that were supposed to be built but were never realized. El Salvador has become the most brutal prison in Latin America. This is Black and White. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
اونی که در ماه رمضان مهمه اینه که ماه رمضان ماه قرآنه. قرآن بخونم. قرآن نمیگه ماه رمضانی که روزه واجب شد.
One very important point regarding the holy month of Ramadan is what the Holy Quran emphasized about. The Quran states, Ramadan is the month in which the Holy Quran was revealed. This means that the importance of the holy month of Ramadan is linked with the Holy Quran. There are two important aspects to the Holy Quran. One is the recitation, and another is contemplation and the ayahs of the Holy Quran, the second of which is more important.
فما تکون فی شأن به پیغمبر میگه در هر شأن و شرایطی هستی در هر مرحله هستی.
In Ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, we read, You do not engage in any work, neither do you recite any part of the Quran, nor do you perform any deed without our being witness over you when you are engaged therein. This ayah of the Holy Quran means that all our deeds are witnessed directly by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, especially a recitation of the Holy Quran, which is very much recommended during the holy month of Ramadan. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The U.S. national broadcaster NBC has dropped the former Republican National Committee Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel as a contributor. The decision was announced on Tuesday, 26th of March, after an internal controversy. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. NBC News has dropped former Republican National Committee Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel from her role as a paid contributor just mere days after her hiring was announced, following on-air objections from NBC and MSNBC journalists. NBC News reported the decision was announced on Tuesday, 26th of March, in an email to staff by Cesar Conde, NBC Universal Group chairman. There is no doubt that the last several days have been difficult for the news group. After listening to the legitimate concerns of many of you, I have decided that Ronald McDaniel will not be an NBC News contributor, Conde said, according to NBC News. I want to personally apologize to our team members who felt we let them down. While this was a collective recommendation by some members of our leadership team, I approved it and take full responsibility for it, Conde wrote. NBC announced McDaniel's hiring on Friday, just 2 weeks after she stepped down as head of the Republican National Committee. Network hosts and personalities, including former White House Press Secretary Jens Psaki, Nicole Wallace and Rachel Maddow, used their time on air to protest at management's decision to hire Ronald McDaniel and urge the network to reconsider. Puck News was the first to report that NBC News planned to drop Ronald McDaniel as a contributor. Wallace said on air that NBC's decision to hire Ronald McDaniel signaled to 2020 election deniers not just that they can do that on our airwaves, but that they can do that as one of us, a badge-carrying employee of NBC News, as a paid contributor to our sacred airwaves, a sentiment echoed by other NBC journalists. The fact that Ronald McDaniel is on the payroll of NBC News, to me, that is inexplicable, Rachel Maddow said in her show on Monday. The fact that Ronald McDaniel is on the payroll of NBC News, to me, that is inexplicable, Rachel Maddow said on her show on Monday, and I hope they will reverse their decision. Rachel Maddow said MSNBC staff expressed outrage after Ronald McDaniel's hiring was announced and that the network's executives heard, understood, and adjusted course. McDaniel defended former President Donald Trump's effort to challenge the results of the 2020 presidential election and defended a November 2020 call in which she and Donald Trump reportedly urged GOP canvassers in Michigan to not sign the state certification of the presidential election. Ronald McDaniel took on the role of Republican National Committee chairwoman in 2017, the year Donald Trump took office. She stepped down to make way for Trump's hand-picked team to take over the Republican National Committee as he cemented his status as the presumptive Republican nominee for president. Michael Watley, who promoted Trump's false voter fraud theories, was voted in as national chairman, and Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, was voted co-chair. Ronald McDaniel herself was once hand-picked by Donald Trump, but her favor among Trump allies waned as she was blamed for GOP losses in recent elections. Layoffs at the Republican National Committee followed the election of its new leadership. More than 60 staffers were axed as the organization tries to streamline and eliminate redundancies between the campaign and the Republican National Committee, a senior Trump campaign official told CBS News earlier this month. The national broadcaster ABC News has also covered the same story. Amid an outcry from some of their top talent, NBC News is dropping former Republican National Committee chairwoman Ronald McDaniel as a contributor, according to a network memo sent on Tuesday, 26th of March. There is no doubt that the last several days have been difficult for the news group. After listening to the legitimate concerns of many of you, I have decided that Ronald McDaniel will not be an NBC News contributor, Cesar Conde, the NBCU News Group chairman, wrote. Ronald McDaniel stepped down as the Republican National Committee's chairwoman last month, and was replaced by two new leaders, including former President Donald Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump. She defended her time with the party and her views on the 2020 election, the 6th of January 2021 riots, and more in an interview on Sunday on Meet the Press. In an appearance, Ronna McDaniel indicated that she was sharing more of her views because she was no longer at the helm of the Republican Party. When you're the RNC chair, you kind of take one for the whole team, said McDaniel, who was handpicked by Donald Trump in late 2016 to steer the Republican Party until he pushed for new leadership. Now McDaniel said on NBC's Meet the Press, I get to be a little bit more myself. Among other topics, McDaniel was pressed on Meet the Press about her past comments questioning, without evidence, whether President Joe Biden had genuinely won the 2020 election. And she split from Donald Trump over his support for some of the people convicted for participating in the rioting of 6th of January 2021 at the Capitol. She also defended a 17th of November 2020 phone call in which she and Donald Trump were reportedly recorded urging GOP canvassers in Michigan not to sign a certification of 2020 election results showing that Joe Biden had won. She said there had been public backlash to the canvassers as they weighed what to do, and despite what the recording reportedly showed, she told them to vote your conscience, but wasn't pushing them to do anything. While the moderator, Kirsten Welker, said that Ronna McDaniel was appearing on Sunday for a news interview that was overshadowed by NBC's separate announcement that they were hiring her as an analyst. In a memo sent on Friday about McDaniel joining NBC, executive Carrie Bodoff Brown praised her as an illuminating voice in an important moment. As chairwoman of the Republican National Committee, she spent nearly 8 years at the highest levels of American politics. She will support our leading coverage by providing an insider's perspective on national politics and on the future of the Republican Party, which she led through some of the most turbulent and challenging moments in political history, Carrie Bodoff Brown wrote. But by Sunday's Meet the Press interview, the criticism of Ronna McDaniel and her relationship to Donald Trump and past comments on 2020 election was mounting, including from Chuck Todd, who raised credibility issues, as well as MSNBC's Morning Joe host, Joe Scarborough, and Mika Brzezinski, Rachel Maddow, and many others. Rachel Maddow said on air on Monday, "You wouldn't hire a wise guy, you wouldn't hire a made man like a mobster to work at the district attorney's office, right?" Ari Melber, another MSNBC host, commented on Tuesday on Ronna McDaniel no longer contributing to the network and touched on the broader controversy that erupted internally. If you watch MSNBC, as you probably do if you're listening to me right now, or you follow news media and politics, this has been a roiling debate since the initial announcement was made on Friday, Melba said. Condi, the NBCU newsgroup chair, touched on the backlash as well. Condi said no organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is cohesive and aligned. Over the last few days, it has become clear that disappointment undermines that goal. Our initial decision was made because of our deep commitment to presenting our audiences with a widely diverse set of views and experiences, particularly during consequential times. We continue to be committed to the principle that we must have diverse viewpoints on our programs, and to that end, we will redouble our efforts to seek voices that represent different parts of the political spectrum. Former President Donald Trump reacted to the news of Ronna McDaniel being dropped as an NBC News contributor, mocking her on his social media platform Truth Social, saying she only lasted 2 days at NBC.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, host on this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to have you back in the studio, Sheikh, especially in this month of Ramadan, in which we are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to this month and fasting, according to the laws issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, if a fasting individual intentionally causes semen to come out, does this affect his fast?
Well, we do know that fasting, that masturbation is absolutely forbidden. It's not only forbidden, but it's a grave, big, a major sin, mm-hmm. which every individual, regardless of whether he is fasting or not, should avoid under all circumstances. Now, if a fasting person, God forbid, intentionally causes semen to come out, and actually he engages, or maybe she engages, because both men and women can engage in such self-gratifying act, okay, which is forbidden. So if a man, let's say, give the example of a man, masturbates and semen comes out, of course, his fast becomes void. And not only does it become void, but also, in fact, kafara also becomes obligatory on him. He has to give a penalty, which is to fast for 60 days, 31 days in a row, you know. And then, you know, if he cannot...
And also the penalty?
This is the penalty.
Uh-huh.
Yes. The qada is there. But, you know, he has to fast for 60 days. And then, because it's a deliberate act of masturbating, which is haram. And he has to fast for 60 days or feed 60 poor people. For some people, it's easy for them to feed 60 poor people because they are rich enough. Okay, they say, okay, today I will break my fast. I will have maybe sexual intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will give the food to the poor people. No,
right.
It's a grave sin, you know. It's not only not eating something and, you know, it's an act of compliance.
Right.
Yeah, one has to comply with God's order and should seek closeness to Allah the Almighty.
I see. Well, Sheikh Javid, does a wet dream render the fast null and void?
Well, a wet dream, it does not make it null and void. Because in itself, for example, because it's not something you can control, you can do anything about it. You might have a nightfall during the day or during night, it makes no difference. But if you, for example, if someone happens to have a wet dream at night, he has to jump into action to perform ghusl as soon as possible, before it's too late, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's necessary to perform ghusl, to take a shower, and that shower is called ghusl, actually. He has to wash his head and neck, and then the right side of the body, then the left side of the body. This is what we call ghusl. This is a ritual bathing, okay? And this is necessary. One should not delay deliberately until it becomes the time for adhan, for the time of fajr prayer.
But what if it happens after that?
Yeah, if it happens after that, because as I said, nightfall is not something one can do about anything about. It happens sometimes for many people who sleep during the day, they end up seeing the semen, okay? Ghusl becomes obligatory because they have to pray the prayer.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javed. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
Ya Allah, thank you for another chance standing at my door. Ya Allah, you give me hope, deliver this gift right to my home. Marhab, marhab, ya Ramadan, ahi qulubana bil Qur'an, halli layalina bil qiyam, ahlan, ahlan, bil siyam.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to the month of Ramadan and fasting with Sheikh Javed. Since you said that there is no control over the wet dreams or the nightfall, and the person is not to blame, so it doesn't render the fast null and void, but sometimes it happens that that individual just wakes up at the same time that the semen is coming out. Should they do something to stop it?
According to His Eminence, Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, because it is coming and the semen is, actually the act of throwing up the semen, it's not something the person himself can do anything about it because he did not initiate it. So it's not necessary for him to actually prevent himself from discharging semen. So he can let it, he can let himself be
emptied.
Yeah. Of course, released. The semen come out and yes. Of course, his fast. The thing is that his fast does not become white, okay? And of course, when he sees that, okay, there's some kind of feeling or orgasm, he should not engage in it. He should not, the thing is that he should not, okay, once he has the orgasm, and there's a feeling, he should not try to deliberately and intentionally make the semen come out.
Mm-hmm.
That is the point. If he does so, the fast becomes white.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, if the wife, Sheikh Javed, does not observe her qada fast, is the duty of the wife or the husband to pay the kafara or the fidyah?
It's not the duty of the husband to give any kafara or any fidyah on behalf of the wife, okay? There are many people, many women who are under the impression that since I am entitled to nafaqah and it's my husband, let's say, who should provide for my food, clothing and other regular expenses, so it is actually and consequently the duty of the husband to pay on my behalf, pay for what I did not do, pay for what I neglected in terms of fasting, in terms of not doing ghusl and other sinful acts, you know.
Aren't the wives under the custody of their husbands?
Yes, الرجال قومون على النساء. Okay.
Right.
Men are the protectors and the maintainers of women, okay? That's for sure. But
like
it doesn't mean that the husband should pay for the negligence of the wife. For example, if she deliberately, let's say, does not postpone her fast until the next Ramadan, and it's too late for the wife to make up the previous fast. So as a result, if fidya becomes obligatory, she has to give 750 grams of food to the poor, to the needy in the neighborhood. And of course, she will come to her husband and say, okay, my husband, I have postponed my qada fast and it's now the next Ramadan, okay. I cannot do anything about it, and I have to give kafara for delaying the qada fast. it's now you who should give it because you have the money. You are the one who works and who provides. So the Sharia says no. It is the duty of the wife to make the compensation,
okay,
to give fidya.
Let's take a short break and then I'll come back and ask a related question. Stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and shared with our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to fasting and the blessed month of Ramadan with Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, you said before the break that if a wife deliberately does something that necessitates a qada fast for her,
yes,
then it is the duty of the wife, not the husband, actually,
yes,
to pay the kafara, right?
Yes.
Or the fidya. Well, what if the wife doesn't do that deliberately? Like, for example, it happened because of like the menses, for example.
Again, it's not the duty of the husband, because menstruation is something quite natural,
mm-hmm,
and every woman gets a period in the month of Ramadan or in any other month. And of course, again, it's not necessary for the husband to pay for that.
What about pregnancy?
Pregnancy, again, it's not, generally speaking, it's not the duty of the husband to make payment for such cases, for the fidya that the wife should give, because just as you said, a pregnant woman may not fast because she has genuine fear, mm, that fasting might affect her health, and fasting might affect the health of the child, and therefore she will have to give 750 grams of food, which is called fidya, or one this 750 grams of food is called one mud.
Yes,
one mud of foodstuff is equal to 750 grams of foodstuff, and then she has to give it to the poor. Again, it's not necessary for the husband to take action and to pay on behalf of the
If the wife is not working or employed and can't afford it, can her husband handle that?
Of course, he can do it. Of course, the wife can ask her husband,
mm-hmm,
to pay for it. And if the husband agrees and pays on her behalf, then she will be relieved of the obligation to pay any fidya.
I see.
Because the husband gives it.
If a fasting person, as the last question, Sheikh, if a fasting person ejaculates during the day, is it necessary that they perform ghusl immediately?
That's a good question. It is not necessary for a fasting person to take a quick action to perform ghusl immediately. Okay, he can delay it, he can do it, he can perform ghusl whenever it is convenient, So ghusl is not obligatory for the fast in this case. Ghusl is obligatory for the prayer which he is going to perform sooner or later.
Mm-hmm, I see.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. Thank you for your nice contribution and the answers you provide for all of these questions that I ask you. And thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to your own program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio, in which we try to deal with some of the jurisprudential laws related to fasting and the blessed month of Ramadan. Please remember us in your du'as. Keep us in your prayers.
and wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Oh Allah, please unite us and guide us to paradise. Oh, and guide us to paradise. Ramadan is here, Allah's mercy is near. Time to give, time to share, time to show.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: a ceremony is held at the Iranian embassy in Syria to commemorate the military advisors killed in Monday's Israeli attack on the consular section of the mission. The death toll from nearly 6 months of the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza now surpasses 32,906.